just on general principle. Duel placed his webbed Ribet palm on the top of the sealed container. With a slight hum, a beam of light curled around his fingers in an ID scan. The small container burped as the airtight seal was broken. The lid slid away to reveal a padded interior compartment. The box was filled with slender, black-wrapped cylinders about half as long as a finger. Han recognized them immediately. "Glitterstim," he said. Duel looked at him. "The most potent form of spice. With it, I'll be able to read the truth of what you say. Your errant thoughts will betray you." Han felt a sudden sense of relief. "But what if I don't have any hidden thoughts to betray?" Skink's neck struck Han's head with the back of his hand, sending him reeling. Chewbacca tried to stagger forward, but the stun cuff silenced his bellows and made him sway dizzily, barely able to keep his balance. Duel selected one of the slim black cylinders and held it in his fingers. With a deft motion, he peeled off the opaque outer wrapper and withdrew a thin bundle of transparent glassy fibers. As Duel held the inert glitter stem up to the light pouring through the broad viewing window, the light-sensitive spice began to scintillate and glow from within, ripening. Han watched until it was ready for Duel to consume. He swallowed a dry lump in his throat. Duel opened his mouth when the segment of glitter stem glowed a pearlescent blue. He extended his sharp, purplish tongue to wrap around the crystalline fibers, which he drew back into his mouth. The glitter stem crackled and fizzed. As Duel flexed his lips, tiny sparks seeped out the corners. Han stared as Duel closed his blind eye and breathed deep, watery breaths. The spice would act on Duel's mind, pump up his latent powers. The automatic focusing gears of Duel's mechanical eye clicked and whirred, spinning around as it tried to make sense of the visions pouring through the Ribet's mind. Then Duel turned to face Han and Chewbacca. Han winced as he felt tiny fingers clawing around in his brain, picking through the lobes of memory, images he had stored in his thoughts, searching, searching. He tried to shrink away, but knew he could keep no secrets from anyone pumped on glitter stem. Skink's neck chuckled, then immediately fell silent, as if afraid of directing Duel's attention to himself, where his own brain could be picked. Han felt anger growing, outraged that Maruth Duel could dissect the private moments he had with Leia, could observe the births of Han's three children. But the spice effects lasted only a few moments, and Duel would be concerned mainly with learning why Han and Chewbacca had come to Kessel. "I really was telling you the truth, Duel," Han said quietly. "We are on a peaceful mission to re-establish diplomatic contact with Kessel. The New Republic is trying to open up trade and welcome you. We came in peace, but you just declared war on yourself by shooting down their first ambassadors." Chewbacca growled. Skink's neck stiffened, then took a few awkward steps forward. "What is he talking about?" Han raised his voice. "Read the truth in my mind, Maruth." The Ribet's mouth hung slack, and Han could see glitter-stim sparks sputtering around his cheeks. He felt the tiny probing fingers crawl deeper and deeper into his mind, scrabbling around. Duel was frantically trying to find some proof of his suspicions as the spice enhancement faded away. But Duel could find nothing. There was nothing to find. The only thing he did learn was the power of the Alliance forces that would be arrayed against him. A fleet that had succeeded in overthrowing the entire Empire would certainly be sufficient to destroy a ragtag outlaw operation on Kessel. "No!" Duel wailed. He whirled to glare at Skink's necks. "What are we going to do? He's telling the truth." "He can't be," Skink's neck said. The spice doesn't lie. He's here for exactly the reasons he said, and we shot him down. We took him prisoner. The New Republic is going to come after us, and they'll wipe us out." "Kill the two of them now," Skink's neck said. "If we work fast, we can cover everything up." Han felt sudden fear return. "Now wait a minute. I'm sure we can fix this with a few careful messages. I am the ambassador, after all. Diplomatic credentials and everything. I wouldn't want a simple misunderstanding." "No," Skink's neck said, keeping his attention fixed on Duel. "We can't risk that. You know what Solo has done before. He knows you tipped off the Imperial tariff ships to go after him." Actually, Han hadn't been certain until that very moment. "Now, there's no need to panic," he said again. "I can talk to the New Republic Senate. I know Mon Mothma personally, and my wife Leia is a cabinet member, and... His mind whirled, trying to think of how Leia would handle this. Many times he had watched her smooth diplomatic problems. She had a finesse with words, a way of approaching other people's concerns and stroking them, delicately maneuvering opposing sides into a compromise. But right now, Leia wasn't with him. "Yes, I think I agree," Duel said, tapping a finger against his swollen lips. Han let out a sigh of relief. "I agree with Skinksnacks. I'll review the battle tapes, but I don't believe you transmitted any messages after coming out of hyperspace. One of our fighters shot off your subspace antenna dish. The New Republic has no way of knowing you arrived safely. With no evidence, they will conclude you got swallowed up by the Maw." Duel began to pace in front of the large viewing window. "We'll delete any mention of you from our records. Instruct all my mercenaries to forget about the attack. Yes, that'll be the safest alternative." "You're making a big mistake," Han said. He could barely restrain his urge to yank at the stun cuffs. "No," Duel replied, tapping his squishy-tipped fingers together. "I don't think so." Chewbacca bellowed a loud string of guttural words. "My best bet would be to kill you right away," Duel answered. Then he rubbed his fingers against his blind eye. "But you still owe me for this, Solo. Even if you worked every day for 100 years, it would never repay me for the loss of my eye. You both are going down into the spice mines, the deepest and most distant tunnels. They've been needing quite a few replacements lately." Duel grinned with his wide frog-like mouth. A final flicker of blue sparks rippled at the corner of his lips. "No one will ever find you down there." 5. The former Imperial Information Center lay buried deep beneath the old palace, covered by layers of shielding walls and guarded by tight security at every entrance. To keep the temperatures within tolerable limits for the great data archive machines, vast heat exchanger systems and powerful cooling units filled the room with a background roar. Hunched over 14 consoles were lumpy, dull-gray slicer droids, hardwired into the terminals as they meticulously hacked at the security encryption codes and backup viruses set up in the Emperor's mainframes. The slicer droids had been working for a full year, ferreting out vital tidbits from the labyrinthine databases. Already they had exposed 23 Imperial spies in deep cover trying to sabotage the burgeoning New Republic. The hum of the cooling units and the motionlessness of the slicer droids blanketed the center with an echoing emptiness. Lonely and fidgety, the protocol droid C-3PO paced back and forth, his servo motors whirring as he viewed the room with his optical sensors for the 100th time. "Haven't you found anything yet, R2?" he said. Jacked into one of the information ports, R2-D2 bleeped an impatient negative and continued whirring as he tunneled through the overwhelming amounts of information. "Don't forget to double-check everything," 3PO said, and began pacing again. "And don't be afraid to follow unlikely leads. Master Luke would call them hunches. This is very important, R2. R2 hooted indignantly. "And remember to check every planet from the Old Republic. The Empire didn't necessarily have time to update its information on all of them." This time R2 did not bother to reply, but continued to work. A moment later, 3PO heard the outer doors open, and a shadowy figure moved toward them with a silent grace. As always, Luke Skywalker wore his Jedi cloak, but this time the hood was draped casually over his shoulders. Luke walked with an eagerness in his step. 3PO was glad to see a resurgence of the excited boyishness that had so characterized young Luke when the droids first met him after they had been purchased from the Jawas on Tatooine. Of late, Luke's eyes had not been able to hide the haunted look and the barely contained power of a Jedi master. "Master Luke, how good of you to check on us." "How's it going, 3PO? Found anything yet?" R2 beeped an answer, which 3PO translated. "R2 says he's going as fast as he can, but he wishes me to remind you of the enormous amount of data he must inspect." "Well, I'll be leaving in a few hours to follow up on some earlier leads I uncovered by myself. I just wanted to make sure you two have everything you need before I take off." 3PO straightened in a gesture of surprise. "Might I ask where you are going, Master Luke?" R2 chittered, and Luke turned to him. "Not this time, R2. It's more important that you stay here and continue the search. I can fly by myself. Luke turned to answer 3PO's question. I'm going to Bespin to check on somebody there, but first I want to go to an old outpost called Eol Shah. I've got reason to believe that at least one lost Jedi descendant might be there. With a swish of his cloak, Luke turned to depart from the information center. I'll check back with you when I come home. The door slid shut behind him. 3PO spoke immediately to R2. Punch up the data on Eol Shah. Let's see where Master Luke is going. R2 obliged, as if the idea had been in his own circuits. When the planetary statistics came up on the screen, accompanied by ancient two-dimensional images, 3PO raised his golden mechanical arms in horror. Earthquakes, geysers, volcanoes, and lava. Oh, my! When Luke emerged from hyperspace, the star lines in the viewport funneled into points. Suddenly, brilliant pastel colors splashed across the universe. Magentas, oranges, and icicle blues of ionized gas in a vast galactic ocean known as the Cauldron Nebula. The automatic dimmers in the pilot's compartment muted the glare. Luke looked at the spectacle and smiled. Leaving the hyperspace node, he punched in the coordinates for Eol Shah. His modified passenger shuttle arced through the wispy gas, leaving the nebula above him as the engines kicked in. The double wedge-shaped craft descended toward Eol Shah. He had wanted to take his trusty old X-Wing, but that ship was a single-person craft, with room for only an astromech droid in the back. If Luke's hunches about Jedi descendants proved correct, he would be bringing two candidates back to Coruscant with him. According to outdated records, the settlement on Eol Shah was established a century before by entrepreneurs who intended to use ramjet mining ships to plow through the Cauldron Nebula and scoop up valuable gases. The mineship pilots would distill the gaseous harvest into pure raw elements for sale to other outposts. Eol Shah was the only habitable world close enough to support the commercial venture, but its days were numbered. A tandem moon orbited very close to the planet, spiraling in on a death plunge as gravity dragged it down. Within another 100 years, the moon would crash into the planet, smashing both into rubble. The nebula mining scheme had never paid off. The incompetent entrepreneurs had not counted on the true costs of ramjet ships and the unremarkable composition of the cauldron's gases. The outpost on Eol Shah had been left to fend for itself. At about that time, the Emperor's new order had begun, and the old republic had crumbled to pieces. The few survivors on Eol Shah had been forgotten in the chaos. The outpost had been rediscovered 2 years ago by a new republic sociologist who had visited them briefly, recorded his insights, and filed a report recommending immediate evacuation of the doomed colony, all of which was promptly forgotten in the already blossoming bureaucracy of the new republic and the depredations of Grand Admiral Thrawn. The item that had attracted Luke's attention, though, was that a woman named Tanya, an illegitimate descendant of a Jedi, had been one of the original colonists on Eol Shah. Luke would have suspected the Jedi's bloodline had ended there, except for one small detail. According to the sociologist's report, the leader of the ragtag colonists, a man named Gantaris, was said to be able to sense impending earthquakes, and he had miraculously survived as a child when his playmates were killed in an avalanche. Somehow Gantaris escaped injury while the others, a mere arm's length away on either side of him, had been crushed. Luke attributed many of these stories to exaggeration in retelling, for even someone with a great deal of Jedi potential could not control such things without training, as he himself knew. But still, the clues and the circumstantial evidence led him to Eol Shah. He had to follow every lead if he was to find enough candidates for his Jedi training center. Luke took the modified shuttle on a figure-eight trajectory around the looming moon and vectored in on the remnants of the outpost on Eol Shah. After crossing the terminator where the planet's night fell into day, Luke looked out the viewport at the scabbed and uninviting surface of the planet. His hands worked the controls automatically. As he swooped low, he could see the decrepit and shored-up habitation modules that had been battered by natural disasters for decades. In the near distance, hardened mounds of lava sprawled around a volcanic cone from old eruptions. Curling smoke rose from the heart of the volcano, and glowing orange smudges showed where fresh lava seeped through cracks in its side. Luke took the shuttle past the battered settlement and beyond a stretch of cratered, jumbled terrain. The shuttle settled onto the rocky hardpan, and Luke exited through flip-up doors behind the passenger seats. The air of Eol Shah smoldered in his nostrils, filled with acrid, sulfurous smoke and chemical vapors. The gigantic moon hulked on the horizon like a platter of beaten brass, casting its own shadows even in daylight. Murky clouds and volcanic ash hovered in the air like a hazy blanket. When Luke stepped away from the passenger shuttle, he could feel the ground hum beneath his boots. With senses heightened from the force, he could touch the incredible strain the close moon placed on Eol Shah, squeezing and tearing it with tidal forces that grew worse each passing year as the moon spiraled closer. A hissing white noise permeated the air, as if the innumerable steam vents and fumaroles breathed out gasps of pain from the world. Pulling the dark cloak about him and securing the lightsaber at his belt, Luke strode across the rough terrain toward the settlement. Around him, small craters and deep pits dotted the ground, encircled by white and tan mineral deposits. Sounds of gurgling steam came from deep beneath them. Halfway to the settlement, Luke fell to his knees when a jolt went through the ground. The rocks bounced and the earth rumbled. Luke spread his arms to keep his balance. The tremors rose, then fell, then increased again before stopping abruptly. Suddenly, the random craters around him crackled, then belched towers of steam and scalding droplets of water. Geysers, all of them. He had walked into a field of geysers, triggered by the earthquake to erupt simultaneously. Steam rolled over the ground like a dense fog. Luke pulled the hood over his head for protection and took shallow breaths as he trudged forward. The settlement was not far away. On all sides of him, the geyser field continued to gasp and howl, gradually lessening as the spumes declined in intensity. When Luke finally emerged from the steam, he saw two men staring at him from the doorway of a rusted and ancient prefab shelter. The outpost on Eol Shah had been built from modified cargo containers and modular self-erecting shelters. By the looks of the hovels, though, the maintenance subsystems had failed decades before, leaving the forgotten people to eke out a crude existence. The rest of the settlement seemed deserted and quiet. The two men stopped their work shoring up a collapsed entranceway, but they didn't seem to know how to react to the presence of a stranger. Luke was probably the first new person they had seen since the sociologist had visited them 2 years earlier. "I have come to speak with Ganteris," Luke said. They looked at him with bleak expressions. Their clothes appeared worn and patched, sewn together from pieces of other garments. Luke's gaze held one of the two men.